Hello, everyone.
I'm Carl.
And I'm Em.
Welcome to our podcast discussing all of the latest books. This is Season 2, Episode 5, and we will be discussing Archer's Voice by Mia Sheridan. We're so excited to have you guys back this season. We have some updates on this season and our future plans. Stay tuned until the end to hear more about that. And as always, we'll be saving our ratings until the very end.
We promise to give you all of our honest opinions on all the characters, chapters, and scenarios. We don't mean any harm to any of the authors. This is solely our opinion. And as always, we promise to Carl them like we read them.
Period. Spoilers will lie ahead. And some trigger warnings for this episode and book include references to sexual assault, death, gun violence, domestic abuse, mental illness, physical abuse, infidelity, medical trauma, sexual harassment, bullying, addiction, alcoholism, a car accident with injury, death of a parent, murder, and grief. So please, as always, take care of yourselves.
If you don't want to hear how this book ends, please pause here, go read the book, and then come back to this episode. Are you ready to get started?
Let's get into it. All right, so the blurb for this book is, I wanted to lose myself in the small town of Pelion, Maine, to forget everything I had left behind, the sound of rain, the blood, the coldness of a gun against my skin. For 6 months, each breath has been a reminder that I survived and my dad didn't. I'm almost safe again. But the moment I meet Archer Hill, my entire world tilts on its axis and never rights itself again. Until I trespass into a strange, silent, and isolated world, Archer communicates with no one. Yet, in his whiskey-colored eyes, something intangible happens between us. There's so much more to him than just his beauty, his presence, or the ways his hands communicate with me, on me. But this town is mirrored in secrets and betrayals, and Archer is the explosive center of it all. So much passion and so much hurt. But it's in Archer's silence that we might just find what we need to heal and to live. Can I just say, when I read I survived and my dad didn't, my brain immediately went to like her dad was the bad guy. That's obviously not what happens. This is a little misleading, I thought. Or maybe that was just me assuming.
It was probably the attention.
Yeah, it might be.
So we start out in the perspective of 7-year-old Archer, and we end up uncovering that his mom is being abused by his dad, and apparently it's a long ongoing situation where he gets drunk and then goes home and abuses his mom. He also is cheating with some lady in town.
Or multiple ladies.
Yeah, multiples. It sounds like the strip club is a very popular place in this town.
All town things.
He believes something's going on with his mom and Uncle Connor. His mom agrees to leave with his uncle whenever he begs her and kind of says, you know, this is the last time I'm going to watch this. I found it really kind of weirdly written because it's almost just like this kid is spying on his mom. I know that sounds really bad, but this is what my thought was. I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like that where he was sneaking around and spying on his mom.
Yes.
I just thought it was a little awkward, but I'm glad that she had somebody in her corner willing to save her from that situation. I'm sure it would have only gotten worse, which obviously he was not a great person, we learn at the very end.
Yeah, it definitely did get worse from there when he caught him. I agree that it was written awkwardly. I think if we had gotten point of view from his mom for the chapter, like an intro chapter, to set that scene a little bit better than the mind of I think he was 6 or something, he was little. I think that might have been a little bit more helpful, but I would agree it was written awkwardly. I think there are several things in this book that were written a little awkwardly.
Yeah. I think the reason why it was written in his perspective was to kind of keep that mystery behind it all. But to me, it started off making more to the story than there probably should have been starting off.
I'm not gonna lie, I assumed he was Connor's, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
The way that it was written, I was like, okay, what else would that dude be punishing her for all those years other than the kid not being his?
I told you as well that I just felt like Archer's, who is literally his name is on the title, was the insignificant story. I feel like Bree's story kind of stepped up and became the majority of the story.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like we could have made his a little bit different. I think there was a better way to write it to give him a little bit of trauma without trying to have these two traumas competing, if that makes sense.
Well, I don't think it was really competing. I think it was so that way they all made sense coming together. Because if that hadn't happened, then Archer wouldn't have lost his voice, which then Victoria wouldn't be running the town, to which whenever she was threatened with that, she ended up calling Bree's tormentor and uncovering that whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously made sense in the context of what was written in the book. I just think there might have been a better way to write it and get to a smoother transition, maybe. I just feel like there was so much happening, and yet it might not really have mattered.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think we could have stopped at Archer's trauma.
Yeah.
I don't think we really needed Breeze, because it still would have been a good story without all that. Even if we got that her dad was murdered and they caught the suspect, that would have been enough trauma. Adding the extra was just a little too much.
I actually would even say we could take it even less. Like, her dad could have been deaf. Yeah. That's how she knew sign language. And then dad died from heart attack or something else because he's worked himself to death. You know, like, less, still very traumatic because of the death of a parent at a young age, but not to the extent of where it's like violence against you and your dad. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we could have cut that out. That way it still explained how she knew sign language, so make that make sense. But then we focused, because I do think that Archer's trauma really was the whole plot of the story.
It's supposed to be, I would
say. I don't feel like it was fully developed. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. I think we could have done better if we had focused on just his trauma.
I definitely think that if we would have focused more on Archer's story, something traumatic happening to him at the end would have hit harder.
Yes.
Because we would have connected more to Archer. But we were kind of being torn with Bree and her dad and her mom at some point, and then also Bree's neighbor, and then Travis, and then Victoria. There was a lot of pulling where you weren't really focusing on one single person's situation, that it was kind of hard to evolve.
And it was
any of it to an emotional point.
Totally agree. And I think part of that too is because she didn't fully develop his trauma, so you didn't get a full picture of what he's delayed in until something would happen. Like, oh, well, he's never been to a bar, he's never been to a strip club. And then we watch him fumble around. But we didn't prepare for that. If we had developed the trauma better, we would have been more angry with him that Travis would take him to a strip club. Or, you know what I mean? Like, to be quite frank with you, I don't really care that he's never been to a strip club. I don't care that this man had never been with anybody until Bree. I think it's common sense. From what he watched growing up, he knew his Uncle Connor was not supposed to be talking to his mama like that. So he knew men and women, they're not supposed to step out in a marriage. So that to then be like, oh, we're going to take you to a strip club and convince you this is just what men do, and this is what Bree wants. I struggle with that.
I think Travis' storyline was set up because there's a book afterwards of Travis. So I think that it was like setting him up to be a character that we hated. So then in his book, he becomes a character we love.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I didn't think it was needed. It could just be its own independent book where he was just slightly mentioned as being present in the background kind of situation. But I think that my biggest problem, which I know we're not quite here yet, but my biggest problem was the fact that whenever somebody has that kind of PTSD situation, especially in a potential rape situation, they're a little bit more reserved with intimacy. And it seemed like she wasn't really affected by it as much as what I would like arguably say that a victim would be.
Well, and I think it goes both ways. I think there are certain victims that are like no touch at all. And then there's the opposite where they want all touch.
Yeah.
She didn't fall into either one of those categories. And it was kind of hinted that she might have fell into the I don't want anybody to touch me category, and she was uncomfortable. But then she relaxed. It wasn't fully developed, to be quite frank. I think we wanted to throw all this trauma in there. I don't think we developed it properly. And I talked to Emily about this prior to us recording this episode. It had really good bones. I wanted so badly to love Archer. And I liked him by the end of it. I didn't love him to where he's going to be at the top of my book boyfriend list. But I liked him. But I wanted so badly to love him. And I think we just didn't develop things properly. Because it did have good bones and it could have been great. But it was just okay. which makes me really sad. It's been such a highly anticipated read for me for so long. So I'm a little sad that I got let down.
Yeah, I was talking to Carly and I was telling her that I was listening to one of our bonus episodes that we had already recorded. And she talked about how he's definitely going to be in the top 95% likely to be in my top book boyfriend list. In one of our episodes, we talked about our most anticipated reads. And this was one of them on Carly's list. I kind of felt really bad for her that she read this and it kind of let her down a little bit.
I'm glad we read this first and then read the last letter. Because if I read the last letter and then read this, I probably would have been even more disappointed.
Yeah.
Because I love Beckett. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was such a highly anticipated. I've seen such good things about it on Book Talk. I was super excited. And like I said, it wasn't awful. I didn't hate it. It was okay. But it just didn't live up to the hype that I thought it was going to. And I really think that's because it wasn't properly developed. It had good bones. Yeah. We just didn't dive in where we should have dove in.
And I felt like there was some kind of immaturity in the writing a little bit as well. I mean, nothing against Mia, but some of the scenes, especially the smut scenes, were wrote terribly.
I agree. And I'm honestly, all about smut. So if me saying I could have done without it, that tells you something.
Yeah, I told Carly I skipped past because it was just like, okay. It wasn't cringe what they were doing. It was cringe the way it was written and described.
Here's my problem. Like, if it had been from Archer's point of view, like the last chapter, that alternate chapter or whatever it is, I could see why it would be immature because he's inexperienced. But we got it from Bree's point of view throughout the entire book mainly, and it was still immature. And I had to remind myself that they're 23 years old too. I had to keep coming back to that, trying to, they're 23, maybe that's why I'm reading it, and it's a little immature. I'm 25, though, so it really isn't that much different. I don't think I would describe it that way. I did struggle a little bit with it being a little immature. But again, I think that's partially of like it wasn't developed properly to show us why maybe they were inexperienced or why it's less known. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't fully get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We end up talking about Bree running from her problems, and she ends up appearing in Maine, and pretty much it sounds like she didn't tell anybody she was going. She just packed some bags, jumped in her car, and drove. Then we meet her sweet little elderly neighbor. It was kind of a weird thing because you just come to this town, look at this house, hand over deposit, and then go and sit on the front porch of your neighbor's house and have sweet tea with her and just like chit chat like they're old friends. So it was a little quick and a little weird for me how quickly it went. But Anne does recommend her to the job at the diner. But she ends up deciding to go grocery shopping because she doesn't have anything other than the few things that she brought with her. And she ends up running into this mysterious man who doesn't speak. And she's picking up her groceries and just babbling on, kind of embarrassed that she's dropped all of her groceries.
I love a good meet cute. I live for it. Okay.
Yeah.
This was awful.
It was very weird.
And not like it was just awkward. No. And then for her to have lived so long with somebody that was deaf and to look at this man and ask him, are you going to say something? I didn't think it matched the character we were trying to set up.
Yes.
So then I was like, that's so rude. And even if he wasn't deaf or mute, he doesn't owe you anything as to say anything to you. You just knocked into him and rolled food in his, like, go away. He was nice enough to even help you pick it up. Most people wouldn't help you pick it up.
All you had to say was thanks.
Thanks. Have a good day. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I thought that was rude. Yeah. I didn't like that. To start out that way might have set me off the wrong tone for her.
I agree. So then the next morning, she has a PTSD moment where we get a glimpse of what happened to her dad and herself. She ends up going to the diner to see about the job and pretty much is hired on the spot, which... all these people are entirely too trusting, but she randomly just all of a sudden starts a conversation with Maggie about who the mystery man was, and instantly Maggie was like, oh yeah, of course, it's Archer. And so she explains that he's deaf and that's why he didn't speak. And then we also learn that Bree's dad was deaf and that she knew sign language. She also just starts learning more and more about how Archer's family was in a car crash outside of town. Archer's parents and uncle had died, and that he went to go live with his other uncle who ended up dying of cancer, but wasn't quite right in the head is how they described him. And so she ends up meeting these girls that are local to the town, Maggie and all this, but like instantly she's asking questions about people in this town without even like getting to know these people and knowing who they are. Couldn't really tell you who these local girls are, what their significance is, just that they answer questions whenever she magically needs questions answered.
Takes her out to a bar once or twice.
So it was just kind of weird. I mean, I felt like we could have gotten that same information from Maggie and without adding these two other characters. Honestly, we probably could have made Maggie just younger and then had her as just like a waitress in the diner, and she's like maybe the manager or something like that, and she's the one that took her out to the bars and stuff. I didn't feel like there was a necessity to add more characters to the situation. Norm was kind of insignificant as well and didn't need to really be there, other than at the end it seemed like she made him into the father figure, but that was it. I think that if they were really going to build up that storyline, they should have added more to the story.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think it would have been better to build up Maggie and Norm as a mom and dad figure in this mom and pop cafe, and then like one other waitress that was young. Like that's how I would have done it. I mean, like Maggie wasn't a waitress, like she was just there because she owned it, partially because it would have also set us up for when he leaves and Maggie says, no, you're coming to our house for Christmas. Throughout the whole thing, like, we love Maggie. Maggie's helpful and she's like a mom figure and whatever. But we don't actually get it from Bree looking at them like that. Does that make sense?
I do think if we were going to make them the older couple that she kind of adapts them, replace them with Anne.
Yes.
They live in the house next door to her, you know, that kind of situation. I felt like Anne was very insignificant and really didn't need to be there.
No. Even when she has the heart attack, it doesn't add anything to the story.
No. So I think some things that could have been kind of replaced, not really adding any more characters, but just adding to the story in the right way. I think instead of having these side conversations with Anne, we could have had these conversations with Maggie to build that relationship and then potentially replace some of that stuff at the end with more of an explanation into Archer or Bree to fulfill that. We also meet Travis pretty quickly there too, and he starts flirting with Bree, and however, all of a sudden, Bree starts going to the beach and she keeps riding by Archer's house and stopping at his, almost like a stalker.
Yeah, he was stalking this man. It was weird.
She's just like, my thing is, just because this man didn't talk to you, you're so enamored with him that you want to stalk him. Like, I don't know. But in my mind, I immediately went to criminology and was like, that happens all the time in serial killer cases. So it's just like, okay, that just makes her possibly a serial killer. But, you know.
Agreed.
But we do have another flashback while she's at the beach, and she basically sees her dad signing for her to hide right before he was shot. And on her way to the beach, she ends up stopping again at Archer's door.
Also, when she goes to the beach, I just remember this part. There's a part where she wakes up from the nightmare and says she feels somebody watching her. And we never wrap that up to say that it was Archer.
I think the story about Archer peeking through the bushes
was some hint at it, Travis, but it doesn't tell us outright.
Yeah. No.
Why say it?
But she and
who cares?
It's true.
Especially because when she finally goes in his yard, he's still like, what do you want?
I think it was just to build up to her paranoia, maybe. But again, that was another trauma thing that didn't really need to be there.
Maybe so. It was weird.
Well, when her dog does run into his yard, she ends up running into Archer. I did find his responses very much like what I would respond with. Like, what do you want? Why are you here? No, I don't want to go out for pizza with you. And then she was like, that's kind of rude. And he's like, thanks, and like adds no thanks to the piece of paper. And I was like, all right. But she ends up discovering from the whole interaction that he does actually know sign language. That kind of makes her a little bit more enamored with him even more.
Agreed.
And so
it's weird. I had such high hopes.
It was a lot and nothing all at the same time.
Agreed.
But she ends up going out with these local girls that I didn't feel. And so we end up running across Travis, who ends up making her uncomfortable, but then she's not uncomfortable, but then she is uncomfortable. I don't know. It was a weird interaction. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up going back to the grocery store again, and she's short on funds, but Archer ends up spotting her the money, and like the whole grocery store is in shock that they had this interaction. Weird. And then he signs goodnight to her.
And she is just a goner.
Yeah, it's for her.
Put a ring on it, baby. Yeah.
It was
just, you're right. Immature writing is the best way to put it. And I don't know if that was intentional, if Mia thought that it would make more sense because Archer is so isolated and inexperienced. I didn't like it.
Like the people surrounding him was the same way, though, too.
Like Travis.
I mean, the whole grocery store.
Yeah. It was weird.
Anne even seemed kind of immature, to be honest. I mean, gossiping on her front porch with tea with some new neighbor that just showed up.
Makes sense in a small town.
Well, yes.
Although tea in Maine, I didn't know they drank tea up there. Must be unsweet.
But speaking of awkward, we get into 14-year-old Archer. And how he has his first hard-on, and he asked his uncle about it, and he just basically threw magazines at him and told him to figure it out himself. But then he kind of peeks through his bush line to the beach, where he sees Travis with a bunch of females. He ends up having a hard-on in front of them, and they all end up laughing at him, and then Travis, like, kisses Archer's crush. And then he has like a freak out moment where he throws a rock at a dog and cries in the bushes as uncle comes and talks to him. It was I don't know if it was to the point where it was trying to build his immaturity. I'm not quite sure what the point of it was, other than the only thing that actually stood out to me was the start of a rivalry again with Travis and Archer that had happened with Marcus and Connor.
That's what I took from
but
it.
But we could have got there differently, I feel like. It didn't have to be that. I did really like the quote that his uncle did say, and he said, "They don't know who you are, Archer. They have no idea, and they don't deserve to know. Don't let their judgment hurt you."
His uncle was. So I liked his uncle.
They said that he had moments of clarity, so I guess that was his moment of clarity. But even then, he did not seem like the nurturing type the entire time. They talk about how the clothes didn't fit him and stuff like that, so he didn't really take the time out of, like, to nurture him realistically. It just, like, this random moment he was like, "Hey, buddy, I feel bad for you. Let me give you some advice." It was weird.
And somehow turned out to be this nice, sweet, loving guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about that.
The reason why I think it was basically to streamline a conversation about Connor and Marcus is because the next conversation she has with Maggie is about how Connor and Marcus had a competition of sorts to earn Alyssa, Archer's mom's
love. Don't forget about the third brother, who was also in love with her, but was nowhere in the competition.
Yeah, so
why do they all Nathan three love her? Like,
I don't know. That's my thing. They're instantly enamored with each other. And not only that, but my biggest thing was, there is at one point, I think it's several chapters, I think I notated it somewhere in my notes, but she's only been there for like a month at some point, and she's already deeply, madly in love with this guy. It just, like, the storylines on this love, just in almost every book. Twilight was the same. The storyline just, she was pretty much married and had a child within a year of that. So it was just, like, similarly, like, to me, how quickly, it was crazy how quickly everything happened.
How quickly it happened and how much happened in that short time span.
Yeah. And I have to say, the comparison between the last letter and this with the timeline made more sense to me. Like, there, it clearly stated, like, 6 months later, 8 months later, you know, multiple months later, you know, I still hadn't spoken to so-and-so. Like, there was multiple instances where the timeline made sense with what was going on.
I agree.
But in this case, it was, like, all this pretty much happens in like a month, and then he disappears for like 3 months. So, and then he comes back and they're married happily ever after 5 years later.
Let me tell you how mad I was when he left. I wouldn't have waited. When you can't even like write or call to let me know like where you are, how long you're going to be there.
See,
I'm staying in this town because of you, and you're going to leave and not tell me?
Honestly, no. That was probably the best part of the book for me. I know that sounds bad, but the like Archer's story of how what he did while he was gone and how he learned to discover himself, to me, was a character-building moment for Archer that I felt like truly...
3 months.
Yeah. I don't know at all you can learn in 3 months about yourself.
Or the world. I mean, you can learn some things, but the grand scheme of things to where now you're perfectly content with being with her and having babies.
Well, and you don't fear that you're going to lose her at every second of the turn.
And nowhere did we mention any sort of counseling, and that baby needs counseling.
Thing is, he talked about visiting restaurants, coffee shops, going and seeing Thor, getting a job. But even then, like, in 3 months, you've learned so much about yourself by just doing those four kind of things. But it was the best character building. Because, I mean, even Bree, I didn't feel like had really great character building and character evolution at the end. But I did feel like that was the most significant character building moment. And we really didn't get a whole lot.
That's fair.
So I really think that should have been, like, more so the middle of the book.
Like, I would have
maybe like the middle of the book, Archer had decided that months prior that he was going to go on this adventure of a lifetime for himself. And he basically just ends up falling in love with Bree before he goes and decides that, you know, he needs to go instead and then comes back and we get some
if
more.
If that had happened towards the middle of the book before they ever like did it.
Yeah.
And he was like, I need some time, but I'll be back. But I need to take a trip and deal with some things, and then we can see if this can work. I could respect that more.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
I think it wouldn't have made more sense as well.
The timing of it is what bothered me so much about it. And I don't know. I wouldn't, like, my trust issues? No.
See, here's my thought with the process, is that they would kind of met – Bree's working through her issues. Archer's like, hey, I gotta go work on my issues. Like, but they're kind of like enamored with each other for the time period. And then
that should have been when he was texting.
Yes. And then during that time period, Bree is working through her issues, but then she also has where Travis is kind of being a little pushy. And then whenever Archer gets back, he ends up finding out, like, maybe Travis is, like, spreading a rumor that they're together or something like that, like he was with his mom. And whenever Archer gets back, he thinks he's lost her. And then that's whenever we kind of get that competition that Marcus and Connor had and kind of parallel the story with the past story. And then at the end, you know, we get that nice character development with Archer and, you know. Whatever.
That's exactly how it should have been written.
Yeah.
We do that every episode, though. Even when we love a book, we're almost every time we still have something that could have made it even better.
Well, but nobody's asking for advice, so we've got to give it.
They still ain't asking.
Hey, I do think Rebecca took your advice when we had talked about some of the stuff that should be in book three, because go back and clip in some of those things. You talked about a lot of things that she's spoiled already saying that there was going to be. So.
Are you listening, Rebecca? I also called what they were going to do with the It Ends With Us movie. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have some. Well, and then that's part of the clips. And then the other rest of the clips are me just being absolutely ridiculous. So it's a 50-50 shot what you're going to get that day.
What's bad, though, is that's only 15, 30 seconds.
I know, but that's scary. Me cracking my neck in that one. I'm not even talking, and yet I look like I'm over here like twitching.
There's one where you were doing really good, but I could tell I was reading your notes, and so I looked over to the side because that's whenever I used to use my iPad, and so I'm sitting there reading through my notes, and you're just like, yeah, 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 and you kept looking at me like, bitch, what are you listening to me?
My favorites are when, like, I go on a rant and you're clearly, like, reading your notes. And then you'll be like,
"Yeah,
okay, so as soon as I finish and you go to the next thing," which you've gotten much better about that. But I love those clips because it looks like you don't agree with what I'm saying or something. And, like, you're just being very dismissive. Like, would you shut up so we can go on?
Well, I know going back and, like, watching some of the ones in The Silver Flame, I pretty much didn't agree with it. But I knew I wasn't going to continue on. So I was like, yeah, let's move on.
Oh, that's funny.
But, back to kind of the storyline where the competition between Connor and Marcus. She apparently got married to Marcus because she was pregnant, but she ended up losing that baby. And sometime during that time period, she ended up getting pregnant with Archer. And then Connor became the chief of police, got married, and had Travis. And then it kind of was like, I get why it was put there, because I think it was supposed to be a parallel to the previous chapter, but it was kind of a confusing place, because then we go into Bree walking by Archer's house again, and he has a litter of puppies that he wants to show her. And then, you know, they talk to each other in some sign language. It was a weird interaction. And then all of that, it reminded me of, like, a creeper in a van pulling up and be like, I got some puppies for you, you know.
It was also weird because, so I listened to it, but I also read it. And there were scenes where it would say, like, and I don't know if this was intentional, but did you find it a little weird? Because when I was listening to it, it would get a little confused whether or not Bree was saying it or signing it.
Hers didn't clarify every time whether or not she signed or she said it, but it was like italicized if she was signing it and just like normal writing. So then your brain just like registers that she's signing. Okay. So, I mean, that may be the, like the difference between the reading and the writing kind of situation.
Well, it just got a little confusing for me, especially on her part, whether or not she was signing or saying what we were doing. It was clarified a couple times, but not always.
I agree. Yeah, I'm not sure. I remember multiple times reading it, he signed, but hers, I think I just skipped over which one it was just because it was italicized, so I knew what was happening.
I mean, and I don't necessarily know that it really matters, but I just feel like if we're going to make it into an audiobook, it should be clear.
Yeah, I agree. So she ends up visiting Archer again, and she watches him lay some bricks, and then him and her talk about how he's kind of the talk of the town and kind of what the town thinks of him, which I didn't agree with her kind of approaching that situation, because I think that most people don't want to know what people think of them. So I just didn't like it. And almost to me, it was her kind of doing something similar like Travis did. And I know that sounds really bad. I mean, I know that wasn't her intention by the way it was written, but it just kind of to me was bringing out insecurities of his that wasn't necessity to do.
Oh, I agree. It was sort of like here's your biggest fear and here's why it's valid. Almost yeah. Like it was yeah. Inconsiderate.
Yes. Yeah. And I was going to say like multiple things. I felt like that was the way for her to grow up with somebody who was deaf. I felt like she was not as considerate with her language, her
sensitive
talking,
about
her...
it. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. But he does end up talking about how he never spoke to his uncle and that he just wrote down something if it was important. But he had talked or taught himself sign language that his uncle did not learn that. And so Bree kind of touches on the subject that she kind of ran off after her dad passed away. And Travis ends up tracking her down after she is in the diner. And I guess she's been ignoring his phone calls for a few days. And he asked her to go out with him, which at this point, she's already completely enamored with Archer, so I'm not quite sure why she accepted the date from Travis, but that's a whole different
agreed
story.
And if we had done it the way you said it, that like he was gone and that's why she went on a date with somebody else, it would have made way more sense.
Yeah, to me she was purposely just stringing them along and kind of wanted the attention. I know that sounds bad, but yeah, that's kind of how I read it. But she ends up getting ready for the date with Travis, and as they're driving to their date, he kind of talks about how he's taking over the town soon, kind of boasting about that, and that it's family tradition for the firstborn to take over at 25.
It was such a random thing. Yeah. Like, especially if he's a police officer, he's going to do it for 2 years and then take over the town as mayor?
Yeah. Well, it kind of sounded like Connor, though, was the mayor and the chief of police.
You can't be both.
Sometimes you can.
You can't be both.
You shouldn't be both.
You can't be both. I'm pretty sure you can't. It doesn't feel like that should be a real thing.
It should not, but...
Let's Google it. Can some you small be mayor towns, and you know. Sheriff? In most states, you cannot hold any other office while you are mayor.
Well, and so Bree encourages Travis to give Archer a chance, and Travis kisses her after the date, and she says it feels off. So then right after that, she ends up setting off on her trip to go do a cooking lesson to Archer, and as she's stopping for blackberries, she ends up getting tangled in something and thinking that he is coming for her. So Archer ends up hearing Bree scream and comes to save her from the net, and she ends up in like a shock state, which I don't have PTSD, so I can't really speak to it, but it seemed like kind of after you're screaming and thrashing around for a little bit, you probably would come to notice that it's not a person's hand grabbing you. But I've never had PTSD, so I can't really speak to that. But Archer does come and take care of her, and she ends up admitting what happened with her and when the man had tried to rape her after murdering her dad. And I did really like the quote that was said towards the end of that chapter, where maybe there was no right or wrong, no black or white, only 1,000 shades of gray when it comes to pain. And what each of us holds is ourselves responsible for.
That is a good quote.
And I would like to point out that I know this is really bad, but as reading this, my thought was about her little dog very often, because I was like, man, this dog is neglected. It's not being let out. It's not being fed. It's not being watered.
I agree.
There was multiple instances, especially after this night. She has this freak out, then she sleeps or falls asleep for several hours, and then she ends up staying over at Archer's all night long. And I'm like, that's like 12 to 24 hours that basically you're at this man's house that this dog is not being cared for.
Agreed.
In any way.
Agreed.
So, and I thought that multiple times. Like, that was my main concern throughout this book, was that dog.
Mine too, because like sometimes I would just assume she had brought the dog and it just wasn't mentioned. But then it would specifically say, I need to get home and let the dog out. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought you had the dog. You haven't gone home yet?
Yeah.
That's the dog mom in us, though, knowing, like, anytime we do something, we're, like, a specific set of time that we can be away, and there's a time that we can't. Like, you know?
Yeah. And I was just like, man, this dog basically was, like, uprooted, moved to this new town, and then you're not even paying any attention to it whatsoever. Felt so bad for it.
Yeah, I agree.
So she ends up waking up, and Archer has now shaved his beard because he wanted her to see him, which is kind of a weird concept, but do you?
Which is kind of a weird concept, but do you?
Yeah.
No, I thought it was sweet when he shaved so that she could see his scar and see his physical trauma the way that he just watched her. You didn't think that was sweet?
No, it was weird.
I thought it was weird when she cut his hair and told him it was awful that he can't have long hair. I thought that was rude. But the shaving, like, to be able to see his scar, I thought was sweet. Because he was trying to open up and share with her the way she had just had to share with him.
There's ways to do that with other things, like words. Yeah,
well, so. No, he doesn't have words, but it's easier.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew as soon as I was saying that.
It's easier to...
He does, because he's signing. That's words.
It's a language in itself, but technically it's symbols that translate to words. But I think it's easier to shave and just show your scar than it is to talk about it. Yeah. I will say, the way she is like, oh, he's so beautiful when he shaves his face, is weird.
I think that was emphasized because they talked about how attractive Connor and Marcus were.
I don't care. They can be as ugly as the dirt. What does it matter? And quite frankly, if he hasn't taken care of himself, if he doesn't have any sort of like hygiene knowledge, then he wouldn't probably be as beautiful as we would expect.
Well, I think that was one of the things they were trying to play on of why Alyssa was enamored with Marcus and Travis.
What are we?
Marcus and Colin. There was a lot of things that I feel like was only mentioned to try to correlate to something in the past, but then it wasn't clarified that it was correlating with something in the past. So it was just, there was a lot of that. The random comments about his teeth and how he loves teeth care, but then he doesn't shave his beard and take care of his hair and dress appropriately and take care of himself.
Like, his clothes don't fit? That's insane. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That, what? No, it was weird. And I also thought, like, again, immature writing, but I think, like, to insinuate that this woman loved all three brothers simply because they were physically attractive is very shallow. And did not make me like his mother. And I needed to feel the sympathy for her to fully develop the trauma for him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we just didn't, we just missed it.
Remind me, there's something about the uncle Connor I want to talk about in the future when we get to that car accident scene. Okay. So we end up talking about this whole night that happened with her dad being murdered. She admits that she doesn't like storms because it happened that night, that her dad had let a lot of things lapse, including his life insurance, and she ended up having to sell the deli to cover funeral expenses and bills. The guy was never found. And Archer ends up kind of trading information and saying that he was shot by his uncle. Not the one that he lived with, but that's kind of the only clarification he will give. And she thinks she's cured because the next morning she wakes up and she doesn't have a flashback.
My favorite thing in any book where there's PTSD and there's flashbacks is when they sleep next to the love interest for the first time and they wake up and there's no flashbacks.
But she didn't sleep next to him. He slept on the couch and she slept in the bedroom, but she still woke up and miraculously
was healed. I always have to read past that because I'm thinking, that ain't how that works, but sure. Yeah.
So she then offers to cut his hair, more so demands that she cuts her hair is how I kind of interpreted it. But he basically then says, you cut off however much you like, which I don't know if this was part of what trying to build his character, but he was only doing things for her. Like one-sided kind of situation, which I mean, again, it happens whenever he goes out to the strip club, the hair, the beard, like he's trying to do all this stuff to please her.
I like that.
Which I guess is like trying to build up to the character development of him leaving to do stuff for him. But it just kind of felt like a little, like he wasn't able to be an independent person himself, even though they have established that he's an independent person because he's been living on this property, using his life insurance money from his dead parents and his dead uncle, building up his house, all that kind of stuff. Like they establish independence. Correct. But then also make him dependent at the
My
same time.
My favorite thing is like claiming that he doesn't know anything about the world, but he very clearly can read. And he's read all these books about masonry and carpentry or whatever, but he's never read a book about sex. He read a magazine about it, but he's never picked up a health book, or he's never, all these crazy things that I'm like, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
But also it was weird to me. I don't know. Again, we keep coming back to that, like, immature writing. It just was weird. And I agree that it was made out to be, like, him conforming for her, which makes sense then when he needed to get away for the 3 months to find himself, because this entire time he's been doing everything to please her, which I don't think is a healthy start to any relationship. So that did bother me in that sense. But I also didn't think that was fair, because, like, going to the strip club, she did not tell you to go to a strip club.
Yeah.
She said to have a boys' night with your cousin. And not even really said to have a boys' night with your cousin. She said he invited you out. She thought, like, to a bar for a drink, not a strip club. I don't know. Well, it just felt like...
I think, though, that was part of the immaturity that she was trying to grow with, like, Travis being like, oh, everybody does it. Like, you know, there's multiple married men and stuff like that here. Like, it's no big deal. And I think it was... Yeah. However, my thought was, you knew your dad going out and doing that was wrong, so why do you think it's right for you to go?
Exactly, and you knew Uncle Connor and what your mom were doing were wrong. So where in your brain did you think it was appropriate? That doesn't make any sense.
I just think a lot of the writing didn't correlate with each other. It was almost like... two people were writing it and had different opinions, and they didn't ever go back and reference previous writing, almost.
I agree.
But like you said, with the hair cutting scene, super weird. Her getting aroused by cutting his hair, and then him like getting aroused because she's cutting
his hair. It makes sense to me that he would be, like, his love map is messed up. And so the first physical touch he's gotten in for a long time made him sexually aroused.
Yeah.
That made sense to me. Her being sexually aroused to the level even in what she was talking about by cutting his hair was weird.
It's almost like he got aroused because she got aroused.
That is almost how it was written. When we read it in his point of view, it's written a little differently, but it was weird.
If it was reversed and she got aroused because he was aroused, would have made more sense to me.
But even then, like, that's just not how, I don't know. Women's arousal and men's arousal is different. Now, I could see if he was like physically showing that he was enjoying it other than just an erection or something. But like his eyes were closed and like, you know what I mean? Were outward signs, and she was getting like a little flustered because he was getting flustered. That would have made a little bit more sense to me. I do agree with that. However, that's not what was happening. He sat there like a stone and she thought she was hurting him, but then at the same time she was still getting aroused.
Well, and see, my thought was, not to go in too much detail, but whenever she had gone around to the front, if like she had parted his legs and he held her hips or something like that connection, that touch, that kind of that intimacy of her being that close, and he was clearly aroused and she'd be like, oh, I'm turning him on. So she gets aroused. Like that would have made sense.
Yeah, I agree. That's not what happened.
Yeah.
If that's how it had been written, it would have made way more sense. I totally agree. But it wasn't. It was like her running her fingers through his hair turned her on. And I can get like even like the intimacy of knowing that he's not been touched and he's letting you touch him and being like flattered by that. I could get that. Yeah. But it turning into her literally describing how aroused she is didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
I could have just done without the smut.
I did skip over most of the smut, to be honest. Even whenever it just like was starting, I was like, yeah, we're just gonna find out where it ends, because after reading one of them I was done with it. And honestly, I know this sounds bad, but after reading this book, I don't think I'm gonna read another one by her either.
I don't think, like, I am either.
It just,
unless it has a really good plot line that I just can't resist.
Yeah, well, this was a plot line that I thought I was going to enjoy.
I was so convinced that I was going to love Archer. And I do think that, like, again, the bones are there for a really good character. It just wasn't done well.
Now, if this was written the way it was, and then we had maybe a secondary book where it just elaborated on Archer, like Atlas, and we just did an Atlas book, probably would like him a lot better. But
maybe. If you had drawn me in from the beginning with his trauma and that had been developed, I would have liked him a whole lot more. Not even like, because it's not even the way that he's written that just didn't allow me to fall in love with him. It's even the way that like everybody else around him is written. It's just the writing. It really is. And I'm sorry, Mia. I was very excited, but the writing is not there.
Yeah, I agree.
Which makes me really sad. I was really excited.
So Travis ends up inviting Bree to a parade to honor his father. And Bree isn't sure how to respond because she thinks that his father had shot Archer. Archer ends up leaving her a bouquet of Almond Joy bars, which I did find really sweet.
He had his moment. And then I was like, oh, Archer.
He did. There were several that I was like, oh, we could elaborate on this and I could really start to fall in love even with everything that's happened up to this point. But it just never went
further. We just didn't. I will say, one thing that I did really like about this book is them having, like, their own language. That only her knowing sign language and only him knowing it. And so they could communicate with each other without other people understanding. I did really like that. I thought that was cute. I thought we should have actually elaborated on it more. Yes. And made it more of a thing in public as opposed to just in private, too. But
see, here's my thoughts. Okay, I've already rewrote the last half of the book, so might as well rewrite the front. So my thoughts were, she could have the trauma or trying to get away or whatever, and she comes to this town. She ends up meeting Archer, who can't talk to anybody and is like writing down on a piece of papers and stuff. So she offers to teach him sign language, and that's when she starts falling in love with him. And then after he does that, he's like, okay, well, now I have ways to speak to the world, so now I'm going to go out and find myself outside of this town. And then we end up with the back half of the book that I've already told you should have been rewritten.
I would be down with that, and I'd read that book.
Thank you. Then Victoria, we meet her for the first time, and she stops by the diner and asks about Bree seeing Travis. And Bree's like, well, we've only gone on one date, so I don't know.
I hated her. And like, Travis resolves it. Nobody else, of all people. And I'm like, what do you mean?
Well, it wasn't even like a good result.
No, he threatened her to get her to leave out of town. So she's going to go harass somebody else.
Yeah. Well, and she starts addressing why she really came to see Bree in the first place, and says that Archer's dangerous, she needs to stay away from him, like he tried to assault her a couple years ago. Like, if that was the case, your son, who is the chief of police, would have put him
correct in jail. Or when he swung on him in the middle of the parade, he would have went to jail.
Yeah. Well, and so Maggie says that the town all knew that Alyssa was being hit on by Archer's father, and Connor was really the only one that wanted to do something about it, which, hate that for everybody involved, because, I mean, if you know that, you should have done something about that. So, at this point, Bree has only been in the town for a month, and Archer asked if Bree wanted to touch her and kiss her whenever she was cutting his hair, and they end up kissing. They cook dinner together. Bree tells Archer how Victoria approached her, and Archer tells her how Victoria had told his uncle not to get his voice fixed. And he tells her that the violent incident that she's referring to is whenever he had shoved her out of her gate and she had fell.
Which seems sus.
Yeah. But they don't elaborate. So we have to take it for face value, I guess. And then Archer realizes that Bree had kissed him even after Victoria had told him that he's dangerous, and that she says that's because she knows him and knows who he really is after knowing each other for a month.
If even that.
And really not even talking for probably the first whole week of knowing each other. Like,
it's ridiculous.
So really 3 weeks. And so Bree ends up telling Travis that Archer's more than a friend to him after he comes back after Victoria kind of, tells Travis that how Bree's feelings are for Archer. And Travis tells Bree that he's going to go visit Archer because he's been just an a-hole to him. So we end up getting this dry humping scene kind of going on that was super awkward.
It was so weird that I texted Emily and said, did they just dry hump? Because I was like, is that what's happening? But then
right after, she rolls over basically and was like, hey, so I had a talk with your cousin Travis and he's gonna come visit you. And I was like,
it was weird.
I couldn't have waited till later. Like,
why are you dry humping?
Yeah. So Travis ends up apologizing to Archer.
Hang on. I gotta say, though, in that scene when they were doing that and he says, is that supposed to happen? I'm not gonna lie. I got tickled.
There was a couple times where I chuckled at, like, some of the stuff. Like, I'm not gonna lie. There was a couple scenes that were, like, I kind of laughed at out loud, but it was nowhere near enough to affect my rating.
No, I agree. I just got tickled because she was like, sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you whatever to make you feel better about it. Because not really, but sure. Especially considering how immature everything else was in their interactions. But like that one, she acts like, I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah. So Travis ends up apologizing to Archer and invites him to guys' night. And Travis kind of gets into Archer's head about him being inexperienced and Bree's not going to be okay with that. He makes like going to a strip club as a normal occurrence. So whenever he gets to the strip club, Archer's childhood crush is now working at the strip club, which, good for Archer. He saved himself there. And Travis ends up paying her extra to have sex with Archer.
Okay. That also didn't make sense to me in the timeline. I feel like if they hadn't done anything, it would have made more sense. But the fact that he had already made her finish, then he convinces him that he's not experienced enough, doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because quite frankly, there's several guys that are very experienced and still don't know how to handle a woman's body. So it's like, I don't know. Like, it just didn't, logically, it didn't make sense for me.
No.
And then he has to pay extra for her taking you in the back room. I feel like that should trigger something. And it also made it sound like he had slept with her, the way that it was written. 10 minutes later, he finally came out. And then he was like, oh, no, I haven't. And I'm thinking, yeah, he did. I don't believe you. Why'd you wait 10 more minutes?
Like, if you were that uncomfortable, like he makes it seem like, why were you there for 10
minutes? Also, I feel like when he gets uncomfortable, he gets angry. And in this context, he didn't do that. So it didn't make sense to me either.
I agree.
I would have told that hoe to get her hands off of me.
I agree.
And I would have probably punched Travis on my way out. I probably would have laid him out in that chair.
Well, not only that, but then Travis, instead of dropping Archer off at home, drops him off in front of Bree's house drunk.
Which is the whole point. So that he smells like another woman, has lipstick on him. And then Archer just like lets her assume, lets her get mad, and doesn't explain a single thing.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't clarify anything that happens. And
he should have sat outside of her door until morning when she was going to let him back in so he could have explained.
Yeah.
Something.
But instead he goes home, and then Bree meets Archer's mom's best friend, who basically then says that Victoria spiked Alyssa's drink, and that's when Marcus took advantage of her and got her pregnant. So,
which is crazy. It's a crazy accusation. And I mean, it's probably true, but like, what does that change?
Yeah.
That makes her realize that Travis probably set Archer up. Regardless, he still had lipstick and perfume from another woman.
Well, and she goes and she slaps Travis for taking him to the strip club, which actually that was the first point where I was like kind of on Travis's side. Because he's like, what am I supposed to be babysitting him? Oh. Like, he's a grown adult. He's making his own decisions.
Oh, no. I thought she should have done more than that.
Well, she shouldn't have slapped him. But whenever afterwards where he was just like, what am I supposed to do? Like, baby, Archer chose to go in that back room. He could have said no and sat there at that table in the strip club and doing
and
nothing.
I think, like we talked about, he knew. The book is written from his point of view as if he didn't know. But what we've already talked about with his parents and stuff, he did know.
Yes.
And I don't care if every married man in America is at that strip club getting it from some hooker. That doesn't mean you have to be. And yes. Archer knows that. Archer knows he doesn't have to do what everybody else is doing. His entire life he's done that. He's been the outcast. And if you know Bree's the only one you want, then why are you letting this woman touch you? I gotta say, that didn't sit well with me. That might have honestly ruined for me. I don't like the cheating trope anyway. So whether you technically call this cheating or not, whatever. But I didn't enjoy that.
I agree. Well, and then it starts storming. So this was the point where I was like, oh, Archer, so sweet.
So I knew about the scene before reading it, and I kept waiting for it to happen.
Oh, yeah. So Archer shows up, sits on her front porch, so she didn't have to be scared for the storm. She ends up letting him in, and he finally admits that he didn't have sex with the stripper, that he just touched her breast and got a laugh.
3 days later.
Yeah. And he admits, which I have to say was probably the one point where he was probably the most honest about his feelings. And he said, you know, I was just trying to be somebody that you, and then it kind of implied that she was making him like her project. And she kind of admits to that and was like, oh, like I shouldn't have done that. And that's the first time I think Bree actually stepped up and kind of was like, oh, I have made you into my project. Mm-hmm. But she's also kind of just been rude to him, and
I kind of told him what he's going to do, and he's just kind of been like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fair. I mean, I'm kind of a similar person, so I get it. But, like, I don't know. I think not making sure you knew where Travis was going to take him. I think she should do her due diligence if she's going to pressure him into things like that. Because she knew Absolutely. That he wanted to please her. He wanted to do it to make her happy. She knew that. He said it multiple times. Yeah. So I think she should have made sure what Travis was going to take him to do.
I agree. Well, and I did probably the sweetest scene that I really did like Archer is whenever they had made up and at his house, and he has picked out all the folded chips and put it in a bowl because that's what Bree likes. That was so sweet and like such a sweet like little touch.
Wholeheartedly agree.
So Bree takes Archer out into a field to learn how to drive, and they get kind of hot and heavy, and Travis ends up knocking on the window. And so they go home, and Bree is at work the next day, and she receives a call from a detective working her dad's case and says they had finally found a person of interest. She ends up calling her friend, and she says she's decided to stay in town, but her friend decides to fly in to drive with her back to the police station so she can identify the person of interest. So Natalie and Jordan, who ends up being a guy that kind of drove her out of town.
Yeah, what were your thoughts about Jordan?
It was weird. Like, she basically said that he tried to rape her after she had been almost raped.
Absolutely. I don't know if I would say full sexual assault, but he did try to come on to her when she had made it very clear she was not interested. And he admits that he did it because he knew she was vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then they're still friends. And her friend Natalie brought him knowing he had done that. I did not like that at all. And I was like, Archer should be worried. Not that you're going to leave him, but that this guy might assault you. Because he just admitted that was his intention. Like,
I agree.
It was insane. And we just...
Protective, realistic.
And we just brushed over it like it was no big deal.
Yeah. Well, and so Travis ends up showing up with an application for a learner's permit. And he again starts talking to Archer that he can't expect Bree to stay with him. And he can't expect her to basically be satisfied in this town forever.
Why would you believe a thing he said? And if you think there's any truth to what he's saying, then have a conversation as an adult with Bree.
Yeah.
That was what was making me more mad than anything. It literally the miscommunication trope. Hate it.
But it really wasn't. Because they had been communicating about their problems and everything else.
And all of a sudden, they weren't.
I mean, if you're willing to go to this girl and be like, hey, is it normal to have a hard-on? Like, you should feel comfortable saying, hey, are you okay with being in this town for the rest of your life with me?
He was, and I get that, like, it hits on his own insecurities. But also, you just pack up and leave. When everybody else in her life has left her. You just pack up and leave. That seemed logical to you.
I agree.
I didn't like it.
Well, and so Archer ends up meeting up with her and her friends. And she's talking with her friend Jordan. Archer gets a little jealous. He kind of storms off. And so she goes after Archer and kind of jokingly, in a way, tells him that she loves him. Archer admits that he wants to be able to love her more than fear of losing her. And he thinks about or says that he's been thinking about what a burden he may end up being to her. And she says that she realizes that love should make them stronger, but instead for Archer, it makes the stakes higher. I did find it sweet that Jordan got Archer a phone, but like he's a grown up and should have already gotten a phone before then. Bree, so that he could talk to Bree.
I agree. And he like, my thing about it is, you know, it's a thing. It's not like you didn't know that it was a thing. You've never heard of a phone before. You know, there's a phone. Go buy a freaking phone. Especially, you can't even talk. You would think texting would be like your best friend. You could text her all through the night and blow her up as long as you wanted to. You'd think you'd want to do that. Sure. I don't know.
Probably would have made the relationship a little bit better and a little less immature.
Texting was cute, though.
Yes, it was. So she ends up going with her friends to the police station. She picks the guy out of the lineup. And on her way home, she stops responding to Archer's texts because she drops her phone in a water puddle outside of McDonald's. So we get this flashback of Archer whenever he's 7 years old. It was extremely dumb. We get the flashback of Archer when he's 7 years old, when his mom is packing up her suitcases, leaving her dad. Marcus ends up hitting Connor's car, causing an accident that ends up killing Archer's mom on impact. Marcus holds them at gunpoint, and Archer finds out that Connor is actually his dad. And he ends up running at Marcus, who ends up shooting him, and then also shoots Connor. But Connor also gets a shot off and shoots Marcus at the same time. Victoria ends up showing up and screaming at Archer and blaming him and saying it's all his fault.
Somebody should have shot her. You had something you wanted to add about Connor in this scenario?
Yeah, so my biggest problem with that whole situation is I know he like calmly says, hey, like, let's make sure you get your seatbelt on. But like, if you actively see this man is like chasing you down outside of town,
skedaddle,
like trying to ram your car, why would you not be like, you need to get, because like she jokingly takes a good couple minutes like joking around before she's trying to put on her seatbelt. And I think that's ultimately what killed her. She probably went through the windshield. So why would you not, whenever you see that situation happening and you know how crazy Marcus is, I mean, he's your brother, you know how crazy he is. Why would you not be like, put your seatbelt on now? Like, make it a little bit more serious.
I think he thought he was more occupied than he really was. And, like, didn't know. So, like, there was no way he was going to catch him. I think is how Connor went about it. However, I think that was dumb. Connor knew his own
life. See, my thought is Marcus was, like, he knew that he was, like, following him and where they got. And that's why he said, hey, put your seatbelt on.
Yeah. I can definitely see at that point, like, when he says, put on your seatbelt, I think he noticed there was a car coming. I totally agree. Prior to that, I think he says something like he's occupied with some woman or something, so he doesn't think that he'll be coming after them. But
it turns out Victoria had shown up at that woman's house and said, hey, they're leaving, go after them.
I feel like Connor should have done better about his own wife. I think he should have knew that Victoria was onto him and that she would interfere. I think there were signs and he just didn't pay attention. But also, I would have made sure that Marcus was passed out drunk or something, like not something that could be interrupted. No way, shape, or form could he come after us while we were leaving.
Well, I'm just curious why who would he not leave Victoria the same way that she was leaving Marcus? Like, with no notice, nothing, just pack up and go.
Did she have notice or did she find out on her own? Because she's a nosy little hussy. I don't know. But either way, I would have done better. I would have taken it more seriously, I think. We always talk about domestic violence, too. So, like, we have better knowledge about that in, like, real world, like, when leaving is the most dangerous. So, literally taking her and running and Archer was the most dangerous moment in this entire scenario, and we didn't take it seriously. He didn't take it seriously.
I agree. So, Bree ends up coming back to Archer's, where his house is completely wrecked, and she refers to him almost like having a seizure because she hadn't answered the phone, and he's talking about how he lost it, and Bree says it's okay. She did the same to him whenever she had had her little spaz attack. She ends up leaving at some point and going back where she ends up coming across Anne's. And in the middle of talking to Anne and getting her advice about how to make a relationship work, she has a heart attack. And Archer comes running from his house, afraid something had happened to Bree. And she comes back from the hospital and Archer's like sitting in complete darkness. And he finally tells Bree that it was Marcus who shot him and not Connor. And Bree has this like recollection that it's Archer's right to take over the town, not Travis. But Archer says he doesn't want it. The next day, she ends up going to work. A detective tells her that the guy she identified has lawyered up, that his dad owns a big company, and they believe it's a drug-related situation. But the guy is out on bail, and when she kind of turns after having this conversation, she realizes Victoria and Travis are sitting there eavesdropping. Travis grips her arm as, like, trying to talk to her, and Archer ends up attacking Travis. Bree ends up exclaiming for them to stop because they're brothers, and Travis ends up finding out that it's true from his mom's facial expressions. She ends up leaving work because Maggie tells her to, and she goes to Archer's house, and he has left her a note saying that he's leaving to find himself, basically. Bree has a really hard time the next couple months being without Archer.
I would have went back to Ohio.
I get what she's saying because I feel like she has more of a sense of family there than she does back in Ohio.
Not great.
So at the same time, like, I kind of feel like it made sense for her to stay because it was where she felt more at home. But ends up deciding finally to go out for New Year's Eve with the local girls that were very insignificant in this book and don't know why they were there. And Bree ends up dancing with the host of the party, who is also a new character that I didn't feel like needed to be introduced.
Again, because there's a book for him.
Oh,
it just came out March or something of this year.
Okay, now that makes sense. I didn't know that.
I could deal with his little add-in, though. Like, it was very brief. And we moved on. So it made sense that there would be another book for him, but Travis was too heavy. However, we could have introduced him in another book. We don't have to introduce every single character in every other book in this one book. Like, you know what I mean?
See, my mind also went to the alternate scenario of, like, Archer had been watching Bree for 3 months. Or, like, at least within the last, like, month or so. And when she appeared at that party and started dancing with somebody else, he got jealous. So that's when he finally decided. Because she talks about how it feels like she's being watched several times at the party. So, like, my thought was immediately, oh, Archer's been watching her this whole time. And now he's getting jealous. So then he magically appears.
Well, I would love that. But that's not what happened.
No.
He just finally magically appeared. But the crazy thing for me was, like, he decided he couldn't let her spend New Year's Eve alone. And I was like, but you could let her spend Christmas alone?
And Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is to me, but, like, Christmas?
Well, it's a family holiday where she's having her first holiday without him, so. Yeah,
fair. It's just crazy. He should have at least taken his phone.
Well, and he does say whenever they're kind of having it out that he couldn't communicate with her because it would make him want to stay or make him want to come back. And he needed to be able to grow on his own without her kind of being his safety net.
Yes, but at the same time, I don't know.
She kind of was because she was waiting for him.
And he knew that. He says you didn't know if she was going to wait. Liar. Yeah, you did.
But like we said earlier, he says he went to restaurants, coffee shops, goes to the movies to see Thor. He got a job unloading delivery trucks at the airport, made a friend who invited him over for Christmas. He says that he taught the friend's daughter how to say, "I breathe you" in sign language, because that's his sign for love, which was really kind of sweet. And she was like, "So now this little girl's going to walk around saying, 'I breathe you' all the time instead of 'I love you.'" And he's like, "Yeah, that's my interpretation."
I did really like that he did go and do stuff by himself. And he did get over that, like, he didn't want to have to point at things to be able to communicate. And I can understand how that would be frustrating and even probably feel like demeaning and, you know, whatever. But at some point, you do have to decide whether you're going to do that or you're not going to do that. And so I also liked, though, that he spoke with an immigrant in his family and sort of, like, saw someone else's struggle and how they had made the most of it. I did really like that.
Yes.
Because that's about the only context that would be similar enough for his scenario. You know what I mean? Like, with the language barrier and other things. So, I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. But, again, 3 months did not feel like he could have a whole worldview change. Without counseling. No. He needs counseling. What his problems are, they're symptoms of his mental illness. Like, they're not like he can just get over them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, in isolation and stuff like that, that does a lot to a
Absolutely.
Person.
And the psychoness of his uncle that he lived with. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I did like the comment that he did say. He said he had to take some time to fight for himself before he was worthy of winning her. And I did really like that kind of concept. And to me, it kind of explained a little bit more about his time apart. But Bree ends up talking to Archer a little bit more, and he tells her that he's ready to take over the town, which I don't know after 3 months how you feel like you're ready to take over
town. He doesn't have social cues, but he thinks he can lead a town.
Yeah, which I'm going to get into that here towards the end of the book regarding that statement, because I agreed with that. And he said he would like Bree to interpret a conversation with Travis and Victoria about his intentions. So Bree's on her lunch and Archer ends up coming in, and the guy that she identified ends up coming in and pointing a gun at her, saying that she's basically ruined his life. And Archer steps in front of the bullet and ends up in a coma for 3 weeks.
Got me, though, making me think he had died.
Yes, yes, she did. I also agree, especially with a little poem that she had included in there. I know this sounds really bad, but you know in Twilight how it, like, the movie, it, like, fades off and it just, like, do, 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 do. It just, like, has, like, that, like, fade off. It kind of reminded me of that. And it was just, like, whenever Bella starts reading one of the poems or something.
No, I heartily agree. But... And when he left for those 3 months, all I pictured was the...
That's pretty much what she did.
That's all I pictured. I was like, are we in Twilight?
She actually would have sat in the chair, though, and continuously repeated, like, "Come back to me," or whatever her line was that she kept saying. Like, that's what she was. Come back to me. Come back to me.
Funny, but it's so accurate.
But then Victoria apparently had told the guy that she had identified that where they would be. And so Travis ends up kind of giving her an ultimatum to leave, or he would have to arrest her, which I think was letting her off way too easy with all of the evil that she had.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think it's kind of crazy that she calls this guy knowing he's going to come there and hurt her, and she just gets to walk away from it after she also was responsible for your dad's death. You just let her get away with it? That's crazy. That's insane. I will say, though, I also think, again, that we didn't really need to have her trauma, because I thought that was dumb, talking about how he was the son of some rich guy up in the big city, and he got disowned, and now he's going to come shoot her because of it. How does that make sense?
My biggest issue is he disappeared for 3 months. What was the point of putting him in a coma for 3 more weeks?
Okay, let me ask you this. When he comes back after the 3 months and she tells him what happened, he's like, "Oh my gosh, are you safe? For the past 3 months that you've been gone, she could have been dead.
You would have never known.
She didn't say that.
Why would you go and put him in a coma after he comes back,
though? I don't know. I guess.
Like, it was almost like a third and then a fourth after.
Wanted to make you think that she had lost him.
And that would have been fine. But I just found it was completely unnecessary.
I agree. We could have, like, ended the chapter and she, like, passed out and then woke up in the hospital and was like, "Where's Archer?" Instead of him having to be in a coma for 3 months. There were other ways. I agree.
Honestly, in a darker way, my thought was, is that the guy shoots her and then she dies. And then Archer at that point, oh crap, I found myself, but my fear was valid because I actually have lost her. And then like, we kind of go into a couple chapters about Archer learning how to move on from his fear and growing like better as a person.
I agree. I kind of thought that's where it was going to go. I will say though, as soon as he walked in and she recognized him, I said, he's got a gun. He has a gun. What are you waiting for? Why are you standing there? He shot your dad in front of you and you think he's not going to walk in here and shoot you?
Yeah. Well, and then my thought is, how did Travis get there so quickly?
Because Maggie was calling. And killed the dude. That's what she says. I hope Maggie's calling the police at one point. But
yeah, but it literally seemed like four lines later and Travis was shooting him.
Maybe he was just walking in like he always does because he's so damn nosy. I don't know. Like his mama.
That's true.
But I was like, he's got a gun. So I thought Archer was going to realize that and like run at him. And that's how Archer was going to get shot. No. Dumb.
Well, and honestly, if we were going to leave Bree's story in there, I would almost say that if that was the case, you needed to take one of two turns. Archer didn't have trauma, and by that guy shooting at him is how he lost his voice. Or you left Archer's trauma in there, and then Breeze didn't exist.
I agree. I think there was too much going on.
Yeah.
And like, even in honestly, Archer's
the whole Jordan situation, I think that could have been different. And Jordan was the guy that killed her dad and tried to rape her. And then Jordan comes back, sees her with Archer, has been the person that the shadow she's been seeing has been Jordan the entire time. And Jordan ends up coming into the shop whenever he realizes that Archer's trying to take over the town and be better than him or, you know, something like that. So then he tries to kill Archer because he wants Bree back.
I agree. Or even history could have repeated itself where Travis shot Archer because Travis was jealous.
Exactly.
Like, there was a million ways we could have made this better.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mia.
Yeah, agree. I did really, really, though, like that Archer hired an interpreter to make a speech to the town. And I really, really liked that the town had learned sign language to communicate to him. And that was really, really sweet. We get to 5 years later, whenever Archer is now married Bree. They already have three-year-old twins, Connor and Charlie, who are both named after both of their fathers that have
passed.
Which
is sweet.
Bree was pregnant again, and apparently the town is thriving under Archer's mayor duties. How to refer to that? It's not really rain, so I don't know really how this is.
Kind of.
But, well, I mean, they don't really get to pick who it is, so. That'd be interesting, though, which of the twins could take over, because they're both boys.
Well, technically, do get to pick the mayor. I guess in this small town, they're not holding an election. Well, you vote for a mayor.
Usually. But in this case, they said that the oldest boy son takes over the town.
Yeah, but that's not how government works.
No, but it doesn't.
They must vote every election to keep that person in power. But if you think that, you think they would have voted Victoria out a long time ago.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's fiction. You're right, though, to see the two brothers. It's just like the two brothers competing for a throne, though. Like, we love a little rivalry.
Well, and does it have to be the firstborn if they're both born the same day? Like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously one comes out before the other. So, like, is it going to be the first one that out, or is it going to be a matter of, you know, whichever one wants it?
We shall see.
It'd be interesting. But I did really like that we got a character development with Travis at the very last chapter where he was making an effort to change. And then I guess like he had a really good relationship it described with his nephews. So I thought that was really sweet that we did actually get where Travis was actively making an effort. But I think it was a little too late, to be honest.
I agree. I did like, though, that the baby when she gives birth is a little girl. And they were talking about like how a girl had been born for like four generations or something. I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
Not that it really matters.
It would have been interesting if it was the first child was a female.
That's how I would have wrote it.
Yeah.
But.
Because then they change the rules and make the firstborn in general.
So it's not so misogynistic.
But. Exactly.
Like small towns. But whatever.
So, what is your final thoughts?
Okay. So, I'm going to preface with the fact that I don't pick a number until I'm sitting right here, right now, recording with Emily. So, really, my number probably means nothing. My opinion has been stated throughout this entire episode, so you can probably already tell. But I'm actually going to give it a 3. There were some good parts that I did really enjoy. I liked that we got, like, them having their own language together. I thought that was super cute, and I thought we could have made that, like, a more significant part of the story rather than just the trauma. I thought the trauma needed to be better developed. Like I said, I think the bones of the story were good. I just don't think the way it was written was great. I thought it could have been better. I do agree that the writing was also a little bit immature. Whether that was intentional or not, I don't really know. If it was, I don't understand it because they are 23. Archer's point of view, maybe a little bit more. I could see that, but it was also in Bree, so it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I would have liked, maybe if they had been younger characters, this would have made more sense to me. Mm-hmm. But I did like some parts of it. I do like Archer. Like I said, I had really high hopes, and maybe that's why I was a little bit more disappointed than I would have been naturally if I just didn't know anything about it. But I would give it a 3. Wasn't terrible, but wasn't the best thing ever. So mid-range, basic. I hate to use that word. What were your thoughts?
I agree. Mine was actually 2.75. So my ranking system starts at a 3 and goes up or down from there. So it was a little bit below. To be honest, if she had taken at least one of their storylines and just ran with it and didn't add in the other one, I probably would have given it higher. But it just, there was so much going on and so little that happened at the same time. Like, I didn't feel like there was anything significant that happened. I didn't feel like there was anything insignificant that happened. I didn't feel like there was anything, like, there was cute moments, but collectively there was not one moment I was like, oh my gosh, like, I fell in love with this character. Like, this was it. Like, this character, like, was it for me. There was no point that I loved the character. There was no point that I loved the scene. There was no point that I loved really anything about it. There was sweet, you know, there's moments where I laughed or giggled or whatever, but it was real quick and I can't tell you what those moments were looking back onto it because it just wasn't significant enough for me to remember it. So yeah, it was disappointing to me because, like Carly said, I had heard a lot of good things about this book. Like, everybody was like, you gotta read it, it's the best thing ever. And then I read it and I'm like, where's that it's the best thing ever?
Yeah.
And like I said, it's to the point where I don't think I'm ever gonna pick up a book by her ever again. If this is how she writes, I don't want to read another one. It's not something that holds my attention. It's not something that is like I've got to recommend to other people. So it just definitely, especially going from reading this to reading The Last Letter, it was night or day difference in writing style. It was very obvious that it was not written very well.
I wholeheartedly agree. All right. If you liked this episode or any of our other episodes, you can find our free episodes, which are the episodes that come out on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th Friday of each month on just about every podcast platform that there is, which includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Patreon, and YouTube. And then in addition, if you want to subscribe, you can get access to bloopers, extra content, and more, and that is specifically on Patreon.
So you can also send us book suggestions, comments, or general inquiries to our email at likewereadthem@carlwithakmpodcast.com. We also hope to bring you more content on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. So you can tune into those areas, some clips and things like that that we will be putting out. You will also get early access to our next book in our episodes if you tune in to the end of each of them, and everyone else will find out on Sundays with our social media announcement post.
So on November 10th, we will be reviewing The Last Letter by Rebecca Yarros, and the blurb for that book is, look, it's so pretty, I'm gonna have to buy it now.
There's actually an alternate cover too that's really pretty.
I'm gonna have to get both. So this is the blurb. Beckett, if you're reading, you know the last letter drill. You made it. I didn't. Get off the guilt train because I know if there's any chance you could have saved me, you would have. I need one thing from you. Get out of the army and get to Telluride. My little sister Ella is raising the twins alone. She's too independent and won't accept help easily, but she has lost our grandmother, our parents, and now me. It's too much for anyone to endure. It's not fair. And here's the kicker. There's something else you don't know that's tearing her family apart. She's going to need help. So if I'm gone, that means I can't be there for Ella. I can't help them through this, but you can. So I'm begging you, as my best friend, go take care of my sister, my family. Please don't make her go through it alone. Ryan. You should.
I'm tearing up over here. I don't know how you made it through it.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. All right, so.
This book wrecked my soul.
You should absolutely read this book. We appreciate you tuning in to this episode. We hope you tune in next time, and we can't wait to hear your thoughts. And as always, we promise to Carla like we read them.
Seems so.